This is the rundown from WUFT News, exploring our community from top to bottom. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. The Ganges River in India is a sacred spot for Hindu traditions. Family members put their loved ones' ashes in its waters as a final rite. But what happens when a family can't make the trip to India? Well, WUFT's Rose Schnabel looked into it, how one Florida family finds a piece of the Ganges in an unexpected place.
Growing up in South Africa as an Indian woman wasn't easy for Vasanti Doshi. She was born in 1942. The country was under apartheid by the time she started first grade.
It hurt me a lot. Even now, I get emotional. How many people in my own family, and if you imagine the whole country, how people felt.
Vasanti's family wasn't allowed to visit segregated beaches or learn music. But around Christmas time, when the guards went home, they did both.
So we would go to the beach for the 3-4 days. No camp, nothing overhead, only on the sand. And we would sing. The first song always was Way Down Upon the Swanee River. Somehow we just all wanted that song first. And it's a very sad song. But with the sadness comes this hope that things will be better.
Vasanti learned Way Down Upon the Swanee, officially known as Stephen Foster's Old Folks at Home, from old Boy Scout songbooks. The lyrics are problematic. They depict an enslaved person nostalgic for their days on a plantation. But to Vasanti, the song meant something else. The chance to be far away from apartheid's reach and on the water without fear. She never imagined she'd see the Swanee River until her husband, Paresh, did something absurd. Their daughter, Sapna, tells it this way.
And then one day my dad got a call from a banker, and the banker said, it's my turn to be good to you.
Yeah.
And my dad was like, what are you talking about? He said, there's an auction and you can go and I will give you an open line of credit. You can bid whatever you want.
What was up for auction? A rundown roadside motel in Levy County.
Oh, it was not very visible at that time, you know, because of the overgrown foliage and the trees and all that. But I stepped out to the dock. There were steps going down to see how it was laid out. And I said, wow, what a spot.
Here, behind the rundown rooms, was the Swanee River. Paresh won the auction, but kept the river a secret from his wife, Vasanti.
Then I went home. I did not call my wife. I went home.
He didn't call his wife because he knew she wouldn't let him in the house.
I told him, you cannot buy that property. And he said, you just have to come one time tomorrow. I said, no, I'm not coming.
But she did come, and it was Paresh who led her to the river.
So he's in the front pulling me, and I didn't want to go. Went on. It took a while till I got to the end.
And there it was, the Swanee River Vasanti had sung for since childhood.
What God does for us, we have no idea. You know, God gave me my own river and brought me from there and landed me on this.
From that day on, Vasanti and this river were inseparable. A few years later, when Vasanti's dad passed away, she invited a dozen Indian families over for a ceremony on the river.
They were shocked that I was doing that. And then started calling me that we can't go to India, we can't go to the Ganges, can we come then, can you do the prayer?
People have always tended to use a template of the geography of the old homelands and the new homelands.
This is Vasudha Narayanan. She directs the study of Hindu traditions at the University of Florida.
You have New York and New Orleans and New Jersey and so on. When you have the sacrality superimposed, on the one hand, they know it's a local river. They know it's the Swanee or the Mississippi. On the other, they do think it is infused with the sacrality of the mother of all rivers, which is the River Ganga from India.
Vasanti, now 83 years old, has started calling the Swanee River her Ganges. She's led about 17 funeral send-offs and prayers. People come from over 100 miles to see her. Today, her daughter Sapna gives a demonstration.
So what we're doing right now is lighting the lamp to put the boat in the water in memory of
anyone who's passed, just to honor their lives and everything they gave us while they were here.
Oh. This boat is a folded piece of graph paper with the Om symbol written on each side in red pen. It carries flower petals to make the soul's journey sweeter and a small flame to guide its way.
And then we're gonna kneel down here and send the boat off with our gratitude and wishes for the soul that has passed on.
Sometimes families scatter ashes in the water too, which Florida law doesn't regulate. But today, Subna just watches the boat drift away in the heart of rural Levy County, down here upon the Suwannee River. Rose Schnabel, WUFT News.
Other religions also use the Suwannee River in their rituals. You can read more on that online at WUFT.org by searching for the name Rose. This is the Rundown from WUFT News, exploring our community from top to bottom. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. Do you have ideas for future episodes? We want to hear from you. Email us at therundown@wuft.org or tap the menu of the WUFT mobile app and tap Talk to Us. We may feature your voice on the show. But first, Florida has a lot of stories to tell. Do you know your community's history? It's time for a trivia question. This Marion County town is said to have been named after the daughter of one of the founders, but that story has largely been discounted. It actually gets its name from French, which translates to beautiful vistas. Stay tuned to the end of the show for the answer. November is Native American Heritage Month, where the nation honors the culture and history of America's indigenous people. Alachua County actually has a deep connection to Native American culture. The tribes from the area are the Potano, Timucua, and Seminole. WUFT's Jasmine Oliphant spoke with Willand Hancock, curator of exhibitions at the Matheson History Museum in Gainesville.
So we have a lot of perspectives on Native people from the white people who were around them, but as far as their own stories, they're much harder to come by. There's so many things. I mean, I'm a big history nerd, and I think that there's something to learn from all histories, but especially histories that have been ignored or dismissed in the past have interesting things to say about not just the people who are involved, but all people and the human condition. And for Native Americans, it's especially pertinent right now that we remember the histories and cultures that were here, because we are living in the same landscape that they were living in. And so by looking at their history, you can look at how people interact with the land around them and the different outcomes that are created by that.
You told me more about the history with Alachua County when it comes to Native American Heritage Month and the connection to it.
We're the only Alachua County in the entire country, and I think the only Alachua in the world. And it comes back to the Timucua word for sinkhole, which was Chua. There was a Spanish ranch at Paynes Prairie, just south of Gainesville, that was called Hacienda de la Chua. And so then once the Spanish left, that kind of adapted to become calling the area La Chua. And then that eventually became Alachua. And now we say Alachua.
Why is Native American Heritage Month so important, especially in the Gainesville community?
For me, I find Native American Heritage Month to be really important and meaningful because it's a small way to correct the injustice that was done to Native Americans by colonialism, talking about their cultures and what it meant to be either Potano, Timucua, or Seminole. We're preventing them from being forgotten in the public consciousness. And I think that's really important because Native Americans are still with us today, and they face a lot of difficulties that are unique to their circumstances.
You know any like cultural or like significant sites in our area in Alachua County that residents might not even be aware of?
I mean, it's kind of hard to pin it down. There's a lot of them. The first one that comes to mind is Paynes Prairie. It's a state park now, but it was used by the Seminole and the Native people before them.
I heard you mention the Seminole. Do you know anything about the Seminole War and how it was fought, like in this area?
Yeah.
What was that war?
Yeah, so the Seminole War, historians will tell you there's three Seminole Wars. The United States government will say there's three, but I believe the Seminole tribe themselves say that it was all one long war that lasted for almost 100 years. Essentially, the Seminole had moved into Florida in the 1700s to get away from American colonization. Because they were acting in opposition to colonialism and like trying to eke out a lifestyle on a land that they were not familiar with, and that was truthfully kind of difficult to live in at the time.
That was museum curator Willant Hancock speaking with WUFT's Jasmine Oliphant about the significance of Native American Heritage Month. This is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. Coming up on the show, we hear from two biology experts on the importance of an often overlooked place for pollinators. That's after a short break.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on The Middle, we're joined by one of the world's top foreign correspondents who's been places most journalists never go.
This symbolizes this dark moment in Iran. Lise Doucette, BBC News, Tehran.
The BBC's Lise Doucette taking your questions on the Middle East, the war in Ukraine, and America's standing in the world. That's next time on The Middle. Live on Thursday nights at 9 on WUFT.
It's important not to read too much into off-year elections, but there are certainly lessons to learn as we head into next year's midterm. I'm David Green. Hope you will join me for the next Left, Right, and Center.
Thursday evening at 10 on WUFT.
Support from Sweetwater Branch and the boutique property and event venue in historic Gainesville. Sweetwater offers a secluded getaway for business and personal travel. Catering on or off-site also available. Located minutes from the UF campus. More at SweetwaterN.com.
On the next Florida Roundup, the death penalty. It's a record year of death row executions in Florida. Two inmates per month have been put to death since May. Governor Ron DeSantis says it's about justice. We will speak with one woman whose father was executed for killing her mother and grandmother. Capital punishment is the law here in the Sunshine State, so what do you think about how it's being carried out? Email us radio@thefloridaroundup.org. I'm Tom Hudson. Then join us Friday noon until 1 on WUFT.
This week on Science Friday, a conversation with Nobel laureate Ardem Padapudian about the sense of touch and a sense of belonging in science.
In public, even when I was an assistant professor, I would say things like, I'm a researcher. I wouldn't say I'm a scientist.
Plus, the bassist from the band Fish is here to talk about flow state. That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Fridays at 2 on WUFT.
This is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. If you've ever driven down one of Florida's highways, you may have noticed that long strip of grass beside the road. Well, that 124,000 miles of grass could actually help save pollinators, like bees and butterflies. But a new University of Florida survey shows many Floridians support pollinator conservation but aren't taking action. WUFT's Crystal Felix sat down with UF biology expert Jarrett Daniels and UF social scientist Laura Warner. Crystal first asked how roadside pollinators help the environment.
So roads are prevalent around the world. It's just a massive amount of space. So we think about the green area along the roadside and just the sheer quantity of space that is relatively underused. And we have an opportunity to manage them in a way that supports pollinators. And there's so many benefits that could come out of this.
I think a lot of people know that pollinators are important, but specifically, they may not know what role they play in our food, environment, or economy. What could you say to that?
Well, I think they're just essential. If you look at, you know, look across the globe, you know, about 85 or more percent of all flowering plants on the planet require a benefit from animal pollination, and the bulk of that service is delivered by insects. A significant portion of our global food supply depends on pollinators. And in a state like Florida, where it's the second largest industry only to tourism, you know, insects, that pollination service is critical to, you know, food security, to food prices, to food production, to jobs, to the economy of Florida. So, you know, that argument, I think, is pretty direct.
Dr. Daniels told me you were more focused on the social science aspect of it, so the survey. Would you be able to tell me a little bit about the survey and how that worked?
We based these two surveys on perception research that's been done in other places. And we identified a series of benefits that people value related to these spaces. We identified a series of concerns, including some misperceptions. And we also looked at ways to communicate with people in a way that connects with what they value about these spaces.
And I know just now you mentioned misperceptions. Can you tell me a little about what those are and why people interpret them probably wrong or have the wrong idea around it?
Of the key misperceptions we identified is a good number of our respondents believed that managing roadsides in a way that supports pollinators would be more costly than kind of a traditional, frequently mown, like turf roadside. And that's actually untrue, because managing in a way that allows diverse flowering plants to flower and do their thing can actually be a means of saving money.
And then just looking at those benefits, I mean, the study says people like pollinators but don't always act. Why do you think that gap exists?
You know, when you think of conservation or, you know, restoration or, you know, wildlife conservation, you know, nobody immediately thinks, gosh, roadsides would be great. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just not something you think of. But you think about vast wildlands, you think of Everglades, or you think of the Florida Wildlife Corridor, or things like that. You're not thinking about these landscapes, which, you know, really are all around us that are used for different purposes. And so it's kind of recalibrating how we target, how we envision, and how we bring the public along to all these landscapes now really do matter if we want to kind of rebuild this biodiversity that's declining on our planet. And we all have a role to play in that. It goes from our backyards to our wild spaces and everywhere in between.
Yeah, so basically protecting them protects us too.
Absolutely.
And then just for my final question, what's one thing people could do today to make their community more pollinator friendly?
Look at the spaces that you live in and by. You know, if you can, you know, add some pollinator friendly plants to your landscape, you know, you provide a pot of floral resources on your patio or balcony. You know, start small. It doesn't have to be big chunks, but start small and get out and just you know, watch those flowers and see all the insects that come to it. I think most people would be amazed at the diversity of all these really cool insects that are all around us all the time, but we don't pay a lot of attention to. So slowing down a little bit, paying attention, and thinking about what you can do in your own landscape would be a fantastic way to start.
That was UF experts Jarrett Daniels and Laura Warner talking about why roadside pollinators have become such an important issue. This is the Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. As a reminder, our trivia question this week: this Marion County town is said to have been named after the daughter of one of the founders, but that story has largely been discounted. It actually gets its name from French, which translates to beautiful vistas. The answer's coming up at the end of the show, but first, a quick break. We'll be right back.
The Gainesville Orchestra presents a new season of music celebrating 200 years of cultural tapestry with Cinematic Symphony on Friday, November 21st at 7:30 at the Sasser Fine Arts Hall, featuring Korngold's Violin Concerto with Concertmaster Stuart Kitts and the famous Casablanca Suite, and diverse sounds from Charles Griffiths. Funded in part by Visit Gainesville, Alachua County, and the City of Gainesville. Limited tickets available. More information at the Sasser Fine Arts box office.
Clothing prices are ticking up thanks to inflation and tariffs, and more people are saying they don't have to buy new stuff, they'll rent it instead.
I don't really want to hang on to pieces forever. The trends will have changed, my taste might have changed.
I'm Elsa Chang, the rising popularity of clothing rentals on All Things Considered from NPR News. Weekday afternoons at 4 on WUFT 89.1, 90.1 NPR News and Talk.
There is quite the discourse right now about whether AI today is just a little bit too similar to the dot-com bubble of yore.
The reality is some of the most successful companies of today are born out of that period of time.
I'm Kai Rizdal, thinking long-term when the economy is relentlessly short-term. Next time on Marketplace. This evening at 6 on WUFT.
This is The Rundown. I'm Kristen Sherman-Spina. Here at the College of Journalism and Communications, students produce all kinds of content. One of those is photography. Welcome back to Snapchats, a segment where we chat from time to time with our photography students to dive deeper into their work. Today we learn a little bit more about University of Florida student Kaylee Mance and a photo she took recently of a student-organized protest. She got her start with video in high school and soon entered the photography world through the Intro to Photo class at UF. Let's take a listen.
First started photography, I wish I would have been more involved in actually learning how to take photos and not just doing them. Now I know composition of photos and how to shoot in manual and still have your photos come out really nicely. And when I first started, I was kind of just going out there and shooting at whatever, but it really is like you do have to know the techniques and what you should be looking for. I would love to go into sports photography. So a big thing is I follow a bunch of like NFL football teams. Just seeing what they post, I'll screenshot those and save them for one day when I work in football. I was just kind of hanging out in the crowd, seeing, trying to find emotion, trying to find things that were going on during this protest that would be visually appealing, signs, student emotion, things in the crowd that maybe would stand out. So I was kind of just standing like the other students were and slowly scanning around me, seeing what was going on. And when I took this photo, I was standing like in a crowd of students and I turned around and they were very expressive. So I took a picture of them. In this photo, it was taken in Turlington Plaza during a protest. The two main subjects are a girl and a guy, and the girl has her hands up to her face, like yelling, and the guy has a big emotion on his face with his mouth open, like he's yelling. And they both are wearing gator colors, and they are the main subjects of the photo, obviously participating in this protest. And then in the background, you can kind of just see some more supporting elements showing that this is a college protest. Like there's a student in the background with a mask on. A lot of people try to hide their identity during a protest. There's another girl in the background that looks like she just came from class with a Subway sandwich and a water bottle in her hand. So I think it really encapsulates a protest like on a college campus in the middle of the day. If someone were to see this photo, I hope they would take from it how much things can affect college students just from the city that they're living in. I hope that people would just know that this is the reaction that they are causing out of students.
That was Kaylee Mance talking about a photograph she recently took at a student protest. You can see more of her work at WUFT.org. Just search for Kaylee Mance. The Snapchat segment was produced by WUFT's Emiliano Luna. The Rundown is a production of WUFT News out of the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications. Our trivia question this week was, this Marion County town is said to have been named after the daughter of one of the founders, but that story has largely been discounted. It actually gets its name from French, which translates to beautiful vistas. The answer? Bellevue. That's it for The Rundown. I'm Kristen Sherman-Spina.